and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a very special guest. He's a New York Times bestselling mystery, thriller, whatever you want to call him, writer, John LeSquaw. And it's pronounced LeSquaw, correct?
Perfect.
It's funny, people see that name and they don't know how to pronounce it.
Well, I mean, that was my very first interaction with a human being this morning as I was in my workout club, and the guy next to me just turns to me and he goes, "How do you say your last name?" And I said, "I never even talked to the guy before, you know." And he said, "I've been telling everybody it's LeSquaw." I said, "You've been wrong."
I saw
LeSquaw, the right. Opposite of LeSquaw. Here we go.
Right. So. That's right. But it's one of those names that I showed it to somebody at work today because I was talking about how much I enjoyed Damage, which is the new book.
Uh-huh.
Al from Dutton, by the way, we should mention them.
Yeah.
But I was telling her how much I enjoyed it, and I was trying to spell your name, and she said, "Is there another R?" She thought there wasn't supposed to be another R in your name. I was like,
"Yeah, there's two of them."
It's funny how we get judgmental about other people's spellings of their names.
I know. I really hate this thing. You know, in fact, I just had an article published about me in the Fairfield, which is one of the local newspapers, and the whole thing was about my name, basically. It was great.
Now, let's talk about that, though. What is the name? What kind of language is the name from?
Actually, it's a, I believe, and I've done a little bit of research into this, it comes from, I found this out in Barbara Tuchman's book,
right.
A Distant Mirror About 14th Century France. And in 14th century France, there was kind of a French Robin Hood named Croquart, Croquart, which has got those two R's, you notice, in it.
Right.
And his followers were called Les Croquart, which is LesCroquart. And so the Q-U drops out, and you got LeSquaw.
That's really...
So basically, it's French banditry background.
Well, I said to her French, I said, it sounds French. I mean, we were
yeah, definitely
about
French. And that's where the name comes from, the Massif Central, a little town called Messac. So that totally fits with everything else about the...
So your name's as famous as you are.
Yeah, well, it's got something going for it.
Right, this is number 16, is that right? Number 16 of the Abe Glitzky series?
I'm not sure
Dismas
of that series. Yeah, it's the 22nd book overall, and whichever one, some of the ones are kind of squirrely about which series they're in, because they all tend to overlap a little bit.
Is that hard for you to write, having to remember all the characters?
No, I really have no problem with that. I really just know these guys. You know, I mean, when I invent new ones, sometimes there's issues to pick up and hold on to, you know, I've been with Hardy and Glitzky and Farrell for...
And you remember
years.
And you remember everything about them?
Well, no, not everything, but, you know, anything that needs to be checked, I just go back and go, what book did I say that in, you know?
Right.
And then I have my son Jack, who is the ultimate guru in everything to do with my career, and so I can just call him up pretty much at random or text him and just go, you know, what was the name of Farrell's dog, you know, in the first book, and he'll tell me, and then I'm cool.
That's terrific. It's nice to have a son you can do that with.
Oh, man, he's the best. He is so fun. He's really into the, you know, the whole schmear. It's a lot of fun to work with him.
Well, Damage, which is this book, I must say, I mean, I'm so enjoying it. In fact, I wish I were reading it now. I'm so into this book. I was reading it all last night, and I'm reading it. I'm finding myself wanting to read it at work. I mean, you're making me want to do things I shouldn't be doing. I hope you're happy.
That's the goal.
But this is the most intense book I've ever read by you.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. I wrote it on purpose to be intense because the previous book, Treasure Hunt, I wrote on purpose to be mellow, which is a funny way to do it. But sometimes you just have to, you know, kind of go with your mood or your kind of long year-long vision of what you want to be doing. And the book before I really had fun with. It was kind of like a Nero Wolf story, and I really had a young protagonist, and it was all about cooking, and there were serious things in it, but it was a very mellow, light book. And I decided after that, I decided to have a very, very hard-hitting, brutal, in fact, story that would rip people's lives up a little bit.
And it does. I mean, there's a lot of surprises in this book, and I'm not even sure I haven't finished the book.
You're in for a few more if you're not at the end yet.
Right. I have a feeling something surprising is going to happen at the end, because there's things that don't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we want to believe how this guy Roe, and my goodness, I'm almost hoping I don't have to. He's not in another book, because he's almost like a Hannibal Lecter to me. I mean,
he's a very bad guy. He's a very bad guy.
And that's putting it mildly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's just so mellow about, you know, the bad stuff he that's just pretty terrifying.
Yeah, that makes it more terrifying when the person that's doing it doesn't even care what they're doing. He doesn't care about your humanity.
He's a true sociopath. I mean, and I'd never really written a sociopath before.
Was it fun?
Really fun. You know, I'm thinking about making another really bad guy in another book pretty soon.
I'm starting to think you're going to kill off Abe before the end of this book, and I'm thinking, I'm not even sure Abe's going to make it to the end of the book.
I can't rule out anything right now.
Right.
That'll let you go the way it's going
to
go.
And that's the point that we have to make. When you write a character like this, I mean, he could kill everybody in the book. I mean, how do you know?
Well, one of the great things, too, is, you know, I have proven that I will pull the trigger on lead characters.
Yeah.
You know, I've done it in one of my books before, here I am smiling as I'm saying this, but, you know, it's one of the things I had to work with earlier in the career, where you have to convince your readers, you know, that you have got the ability to pull the trigger on your lead character if you have to.
I mean, Karen Slaughter just did it with one of hers, and she's still taking abuse for it, I think.
I've taken a lot of abuse for it, I must say, but I may do it again at any time.
But the problem,
and I reserve that right.
And the problem is, if you've made them memorable enough, people are really going to miss them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So what do you do? I mean, it's like with James Patterson, he's never going to kill Alex Krauthoff or the grandmother. And it's like, you know, you have to do something. You can't. They're not going to live forever. I mean, if you're going to make it realistic, something's got to happen at some point.
Exactly. Well, so, something happens in this book. Don't worry.
Do you? But when before you read this, excuse me, before you wrote this book, is what I had to say. Uh-huh. Did you know exactly what was going to happen, or did it play out as you were writing it?
No. Almost never know what's going to happen when I start these books. I have an outline that I hand in, and I have a general idea of the kind of thing I want to do. Like I had the crime. I mean, I knew what Roe Curtley was all about. I knew he had been arrested. I knew he got off on this appeal. This is based on a true story.
Is it really? Wow.
In real life, he didn't get out of jail. He was remanded back to San Francisco. All that part is true. But while he was waiting for his retrial and they did not give him bail, the U.S. Supreme Court overruled the Ninth Circuit and sent him back to prison where he belonged.
Right.
But I figured this was, it got him all the way back to San Francisco. This was close enough that I could take this and run with it fictionally.
Right.
So I knew all of that, but did I know what was going to be happening with Glitzky or Farrell? Not really at all. I had no idea Farrell was going to be the DA until I started writing the book, and then he was the DA. It's kind of weird how these things happen.
Right. What makes this book so good is you really start to feel the emotions of all the different characters, and you start to feel bad for a lot of the characters. So you're really so involved in their lives that before you know it, 200-300 pages have gone by, and you're like, wow, this is just really terrific stuff.
Well, thank you. You know, one of the things I try to do in this book, and one of the ways that it always works to build suspense is you show these people not trying to solve the case. You show these people in their lives, and especially like Abe and Treya, you know, the fight that they have is just a brutal, brutal fight, and they've never had a fight.
And memorable, though. I mean, you do really, confrontations are really great in your books.
It's like... Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, I just felt like this book just was, I hate to say it was easy to write, but it flowed. It was very easy for me to kind of find these moments of conflict and really play with them, because I was way ahead of the game. I never was in a rush, and the book just kept going, and cool things kept happening. I mean, one of the things that happens in the book you've probably gotten to is I'll just call it the Starbucks incident.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Okay, the Starbucks incident was something that happened during the course of writing the book that was really going on in San Francisco. So I'm reading the paper going, wow, this would be cool. And what this will do will be provide weapons for people who don't, wouldn't otherwise be allowed to buy them. And, you know, that turned out to be a crucial, cool, neat scene.
I'm picturing you sitting in your office writing this book and laughing and having a good time. So what can I do to these characters next?
It's so ironic because, you know, really, I think I put them all through quite a bit of, you know, bad stuff.
Right.
And I don't, you know, I mean, there's just something about this is writing fiction when it's working that is just an endorphin producer.
Right.
And so you can have a great time with it.
And then you burn up people's houses, too.
Yeah. I've played with fire before, literally, in the motive. And, you know, I also in Nothing But the Truth, I've had a couple of fires. And fires are just really, really good things to put in books because they're bigger than life and they're scary as shit.
And to think that you could be laying in your house and have your house burn up around you is horrifying. It's totally horrifying, and this could happen to anybody. I mean, this isn't just it isn't just something that happens in a book. It happens to real people. It really does happen. So
it really does happen.
And that's another thing. That's another reason the book is so intense. You realize this guy. Nobody is safe with this guy.
Yeah, he doesn't really have respect for authority, to put it mildly. You know, most people, you know, they just think, okay, well, I'm not going to do something because I'm going to get caught, or somebody's going to get me, or I'll get paid, you know, there'll be payback. This guy doesn't have a thought of that at all.
Right.
And the other thing is, I just love his parents think he's Mr. Nice Guy.
Mm-hmm.
Think he's a good kid. You know, no, he didn't, you know, yeah, he's had a little sex with some of the help, but, you know, they wanted it, and it's okay.
Right. Now, the guy that this is based on, it was he as bad as Roe is?
He wasn't as wealthy as Roe is, so he didn't have that kind of power.
Right.
But no, he was just a complete, you know, loser, rapist, murderer who had evidently done several rapes and murders, but was only convicted of one.
Right.
Because, you know, rapists tend to be repeat people.
That's pretty scary, but I believe you. It's not something you want to think about.
No. No, I mean, I've never dealt with rape in any of my 22 books, and I think that's another reason the book is so powerful, because rape is just a terrible, terrible, terrible crime, and we don't talk about it, and something like 1 in 4 or 1 in 8 American women have been raped. I mean, it's a big number.
That's wow. That's staggering to even think about, that it's that many people. And it's what it does to the women afterwards. The horror, the worst part of it. I mean, it's bad enough that it happens, but...
Yeah. I had a woman come up to me at a signing in Sacramento last week who told me she was raped when she was 12, and she's never told anybody.
Wow. Just the shame of it. I mean,
I know.
There's
so much
of a shame.
You know, and she was just very upset and crying, but she had read the book, and she... You know, she was just saying, thank you for bringing rape into the picture because, you know, it's just unbelievable. And I said, well, you know, it happens to a lot of people. She said, it happened to me. I said, oh.
Wow.
So, you know, you get that kind of moment, too, on these, you know, when you're dealing with those kind of issues.
I wonder how it helps her, just reading about knowing that it, you know, other people have been through it and you can get through it.
Well, I don't think it helps her at all. I mean, I think she's now 55 years old, 50 years old. She held that. I said, why don't you go and get the guy? I don't think there's a statute of limitation on rape. She goes, I'm not going to do anything. What am I supposed to do?
Right.
I mean, it's he said, she said at this point, you know.
Right.
She said he might even be dead by now.
Excuse me. Yeah, I guess I can see her point, but, you know, we as... You know, you want vengeance for people, but sometimes you can't always get it, unfortunately.
Exactly.
And that's another thing that goes through this book, vengeance. People wanting vengeance is a major theme in this book.
Yeah. I really...
Did this book take you longer than the other books to write?
Much shorter time. My publishers asked me to hand it in April rather than in June, so I had 2 months less time to write it.
Wow.
So what that made me do was start it earlier, and... It was one of those things that just once I started it, it just kept going. I didn't have like a slump in the middle, and I just kept going. And it was done by, you know, probably mid-March.
It really is tremendous. I mean, it's going to be my pick at the store, that's for sure. I've already told them that this is my pick. I mean, it's just one of those books that I wish everybody could read. It's just, you know,
you saying this.
Yeah, I love the book. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't say that very lightly. I'm very, very picky about what I like and what I mean, I pick up books, and I picked up a big author recently, and I still haven't finished their book because it's just not engaging me enough. There's so many books that don't engage me.
Well, I think that's one of the things that really works in this book is that opening scene with Wes and Sam.
Yeah.
You know, when it's just a funny scene and you see this guy as a human being and his girlfriend as a kind of a cool person.
Right.
And 5 minutes after you meet him, you kind of want to hang with him.
Right, absolutely. You identify with a lot of people in this book, even the children, even the children of the, you know, well, I don't want to give anything away, but the children who are going through a horrible time too. I mean, everybody in this book, you kind of, and as soon as they appear on the page, you're invested in their life, sort of, and it's really great. I mean, it's and I don't know whether you want to call this thing a legal thriller. It really is a legal thriller, but not.
Well,
it doesn't really
it's a
focus.
Crime. It's a crime thriller. There's really no legal stuff in it. I mean, there's one little thing in the courtroom when the judge grants the second bail.
Right.
You know.
And they mentioned statute names and numbers and things. And
I don't think it's going to slow anybody down.
But that's true. But it is. I mean, but it's so wonderful to see something so different than the rest of your books. This is totally different. In my mind, from anything else I've ever read from you, and I like that. And obviously you can do both now. I mean, you can write those ones that are not so intense, and then ones that are very intense.
Well, I don't know. I think I'm going to go with intense for a while. I'm really kind of. I'm writing another book now that is my character Wyatt Hunt is going back, and he finds out. I won't tell you anything about how, but he finds out that his mother, you know, he's an orphan. And we know this about Wyatt. We've known it for several books. And in this book, he goes back. He finds out that his mother was murdered.
Ooh. That's
and so it's a very personal, you know, kind of odyssey. And it's pretty intense. It's starting out pretty darn intense.
Now, I was asked to ask you about, have there been any movies in your books? There may have been one.
No, none at all. No. But we're at least in the ballpark looking at a TV series.
Oh really?
We actually have a deal with Lawrence Fishburne's company.
Oh.
And we have a showrunner named Dan Gordon, and we're pitching it, I think, to four networks this month.
Wow.
So you know, we've been working on this for about a year and a half, and
Are you tentative at all about letting it happen?
Not at all. No, Dan Gordon is great. He's the showrunner.
I mean, do you want to see it be exactly like your books?
Well, you know, my dream, of course, would have it be done by somebody like Mystery Theater in Great Britain, because some of the things they do, like Foyle's War and Prime Witness or Prime Suspect, you know, those things are just so brilliant.
Right.
And I would hope that they would try to do, and I've talked to Dan about this, that they're going to try to have that kind of a sensibility where they're going to keep the noirish aspect of it and they're going to keep the reality of it and not have it be a slick, you know, handsome, you know, beautiful people.
The British really do it good. I don't know what they always do wonderful productions.
They've got a sense of drama that is just amazing, how they can pull this stuff together.
And then the amazing thing is, even if they do one, like they did a Lindley that wasn't based on a book, and it was still good.
Yeah.
It was still excellent. I mean, you'd think you'd notice that it wouldn't play as well, but it does.
The actors are just, they're so good. They're just such artists.
Right.
And they can pull out of a little, you know, like a little blink of their eye or a little twitch of their face, and you can get every emotion in the world.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's what they're not afraid of. I think in America we're more afraid of emotions on screen.
So when do you think we'd see it on TV? In a couple of years, maybe?
If it goes this month, we'll probably see it, the pilot, probably in the late spring, early summer.
How exciting is that for you?
Well, it'll be more exciting when I hear yes. But we've gone through a lot of hoops, and we've got approval from the studio. We've got approval from really everybody we need, but a network.
And do you get approval on the script? Any of the scripts?
No.
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 Do you want? Would you like that?
No. I'd rather not be involved. Honestly, I've already written the books.
Right.
You know, and my job is to continue to write books. I mean, I'm not.
Well, that's what you love doing, obviously.
Right. I love it, and I'm better at it than at screenplays.
You never get to the point where you're tired of writing.
No, not in any kind of real way. I mean, some days I get tired. I mean, I've been writing here today since 10 o'clock, and I'm glad you called.
I'm glad I called, too.
Because I'm sitting here going, okay, I'm about done, and I have to write I'm doing a thing on my Facebook called Tuesday Tidbits,
right.
And I have to do my Tuesday Tidbit before I go home tonight, so I still have some writing to do before I go home.
Well,
but I don't really mind it. I like it, in fact.
Everybody that reads this book, Damage, is going to remember it for a long time. It's definitely a memorable book. mean, and that's what makes books so good, when you remember them. I mean, I've read books where I forget them the next day after I've read them because they're just not memorable. But this book is memorable. This book
good.
Is...
Good. I hope what happens with this book, frankly, is that it has a little bit of legs because, you know, in the past several books in a row, you know, I've been very lucky. I've been hitting the list at least, but then the books go, they disappear. Within 2 or 3 weeks, they're gone. And I'm hoping that people like you will read this book and go, you got to read this book and, right. you know, tell friends and make things happen with it because it's gotten unbelievably great reviews, the best reviews I've ever had.
That's great. That's got to be really
It's great.
Wonderful.
It's wonderful. I mean, I got one in the Huffington Post that some guy, I thought it was my father, resurrected from the dead, must have written it.
Now, do you hang them up on your wall when you get these good reviews?
No. I have a folder where I keep them. I mean, the main reason you keep them is so that when your publishing company is going to put out the paperback book next year, you know, and they have so many books that they work with, and sometimes it's happened that they go, I know you got a lot of good reviews, but the only one we found, you know, was by the Podunk Register that said a pretty good book for what it is. You know, and I go, oh, really? Well, I have one from the Washington Post saying it's the thriller of the year.
Right.
You know, and they go, oh, okay, we'll use that one. You know, so.
Well, so far it is
kind of backup.
Right. Well, I haven't read every book this year, obviously,
yeah.
but so far it's one of the best I've read.
Cool.
I mean, I can't think of anything that's been better. And
wow.
We're only 15 days or 17 days into January, but, you know,
yeah.
it's the best thing I've read all year.
Well, cool.
And hopefully I'll feel that way in December. I mean, there's lots of stuff
that wouldn't that be good? Yeah.
yeah. I mean, it's such a crapshoot with books. You never know when you pick a book up how you're going to react to it.
Right.
What was the hardest part about writing Damage for you? Or was there anything hard?
You know, this is what's so weird about this book. There was nothing hard about it at all.
There was no scenes that were hard to write? I mean, the scene...
Well, of course, some scenes, you know, are more challenging than others just in terms of details and, you know, is it long enough? Is it short enough? Do you have enough beats in it? Are there enough punch?
Right.
But that's just part of the everydayness of writing books. You know, you go through that.
Right.
But at no time did I, like, have a week where I was just stuck, you know, because I had all these characters in tremendous motion and... There was just nowhere to get bored.
Yeah.
So I just rocked.
It's one of these books that you sit and you read and you can't wait to turn the page to see what's going to happen next.
It's going to kill you. The end is going to kill you.
Oh,
I shouldn't tell you that, but the end is really, really, really good.
As long as it makes perfect sense, I'll be happy.
Oh, there will not be one thing left unturned.
Oh, really?
I don't think so.
Now I can't wait to go back to it. Now I can't wait to sell it at the store. See, that's it. That's the fun thing when you read a great book. You can't wait to sell it to other people, too, and tell them how great it is. I mean, that's what makes it more fun to work in a bookstore, when you have those books that can do that. Because so many people say, oh, legal thrillers, or thriller. I've read so many different ones, you know. And to me, there are some that are good and some that aren't. But you're one of the better ones.
You know, the whole genre thing is kind of ridiculous because it's either a good book or a bad book. I mean, you know, I read a book this year by a girl named Katrina, some British woman. It's called the something of bloodstains, the careful treatment of bloodstains or something
right.
like that.
Huh.
And it's, you know, it comes across just like a total cozy, like, you know, the book I would never read. I don't even know why I picked it up. But I loved it. You know, I didn't go, oh, this is a little cozy-ish. You know, I went, no, this is a great...
Well, why do we have to put things, labels
yeah.
on things? It's like people. Why do we have to put labels on people? Why can't
right.
we just take everybody
yeah.
as they come? And if they treat us badly, you know...
Then we eschew them in the future.
Right, exactly.
You know?
If they're decent people, what's the difference? What kind of a life they have or what color their skin is or anything, you know?
I know.
Whether they're Republican or Democrat. I had a conversation with somebody last week about that. I mean, why do you
uh-huh.
have to... Well, he said, oh, yeah, I do judge people by whether they're Republicans or Democrats. It's like, that's stupid.
Yeah. No, I judge them by whether or not they're good dinner conversation. You know, whether they're nice people doing good stuff.
Now, you're very much into music. Music is
yes.
a passion of yours. And you give a lot to charity. I'm looking on one of your sites today about all the charities you give to. It's amazing what you do for other people.
Well, you know, I'm lucky. I've been very fortunate. And
Do you look at it as lucky? I mean, don't you think you have a lot of talent?
Yeah, but, you know, a lot of people have talent. And well, you know...
Well, your talent is writing, and you have a major talent. You are able to tell a really good story.
Yeah. And, you know, I value that, and I think it's cool.
Well, we value you, too.
Yeah. But, you know...
I'm not just saying
there's a lot of money that, you know, a little bit of money goes around a long way. And if you can help people, I have plenty to live on. And what am I supposed to do with it? I mean, right. If not help people with it. I mean, maybe that's crazy, but that's how I feel.
You're very honest, too, which is really, it's very refreshing. You know, I interview authors sometimes, and you never can tell whether they're just saying the things to make it sound good or they really believe it, you know, or they really are saying what comes from their heart. I mean, I can tell that you're being honest.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do put, and frankly, put my money where my mouth is. it's one of the things I just realized, one of the greatest things about being a success is that you have the opportunity to, like, you know, like feed 5,000 people at Thanksgiving. Honestly, I mean, that's one of the things I do, and there's a food bank here in my town that I give money to.
Right.
And, you know, it's nothing. I mean, it's you give a very little amount of money. I mean, relatively speaking, say $1,000. The amount of, like, overage you get for that is just incredibly satisfying.
Right, and when you see that look on people's faces that they're happy for whatever, however many minutes they're happy.
Yeah, yeah.
You've made
things for bigger projects as well. You know, we have a thing in town here that's now turned into a giant, you know, project called the Davis Bridge, and it's we had a real problem with kind of Hispanic kids who are the sons of immigrant workers and daughters who are in school, and they're doing very badly in school because their parents haven't been to school and they don't have any money to buy, you know, pencils and backpacks and everything else. Well, a woman in town started what she called a homework club, because the dropout rate for, like, 7th and 8th graders, 9th graders was something like 85% 5 years ago.
Wow.
And now we don't have a dropout rate, essentially. This homework club has, like, put everybody on board. I mean, it's just been unbelievable. We're now the biggest single employer of the UC Davis work-study program. All of these young people are coming over to tutor these, you know, immigrant kids. And it's just changed the whole culture of the town.
And yet another thing that's in the book, immigration.
Oh, yeah, well, immigration's a big issue for me and everybody else, but it's big.
It's kind of, you think about, and what's wonderful is the people that they use as maids in the book are all hardworking people, and there's many people that work so hard that don't make a lot of money, that barely eke out a living, and you just feel so bad for them. I mean, including teachers, but, you know, the list goes on and on, but there's so many people from overseas who work so hard. They're taught from an early age, you work hard.
You work hard.
I mean, you look at teenagers in supermarkets, working in supermarkets, and always complaining about things. What have they got to complain about? I mean, it's just it amazes you.
Well,
they
the woman Gloria Gonzalez in my book, the woman that we meet, she's very closely based on a woman who cleans my house. I mean, she is a tremendous human being. You know, she's 50 years old. She came from El Salvador. She's got two children who are citizens now. She's got, you know, a business with four or five employees, and she works like a dog all the time.
And that's what they know, and that's the only way they can be. They don't know what it is to sit around and not do something and be lazy. And
that's right. So here you and I are sitting here talking, you know, on the radio with one another, you know, and it's kind of like, wow, okay, it's work. I mean, I believe that it does good, and it's entertaining, and it's fun, and blah, blah, blah. But it is sure not cleaning a five-bedroom house.
Right.
You know, and then going and cleaning another one, and then going and doing another one.
And they don't complain. They just do it. It's like, I have to do it, and they do it. You know?
Yeah, I don't understand all this. You know, I understand, you know, gangs, and I understand problems with immigrants, but I don't understand the general overriding kind of Arizona hatred of anybody who's a little browner skinned. I don't get it.
Well, does writing about this stuff, these issues, help you in any way understand them?
I think so. I think so, and I think that's going to wind up being a big issue in one of my upcoming books.
Ooh,
Again, I mean, overtly, it's going to be.
With which character? Can you tell us which character it'll be an issue?
That'll probably be a Hardy thing. In fact, I have people actually lobbying me right now. I have a couple of my consultants and my legal friends are lobbying me to deal with one of the questions that comes up in this book as the central theme of the next book, which I can't tell you much more about.
No, we don't want to.
Since you haven't finished the book.
Well, I will tonight. I'll probably be up all night reading it.
Yeah, that's good. That's my goal.
Well, what your fans? Do they seem to like Abe more, or do they seem to like Dismas more, or is
it? Well, you know, it's really a it's kind of like, you know, you're either a salt guy or a sugar guy.
Yeah.
I think really a large amount of people like them both, which is fortunate.
Well, Dismas seems a little bit more full of himself. Is that do you think so? In my
well, see, that's spoken like a guy who likes Glitzky better. My favorite guy really is Farrell. You know, I mean, in terms of who I identify with the most, because I'm way more of a goofball than either Hardy or Glitzky.
But I feel sorry for Farrell. At least I do in this book.
He's in a pathetic situation in this book.
Now, what book was he in before?
He was in Guilt and A Certain Justice.
Right.
So they were early on, but he made quite a splash when he got on the scene. And he's always been around with his T-shirts as kind of comic relief.
So you knew that you were going to bring him back at some point.
I didn't know it, but as soon as this book started, he was there. And, you know, then I said, oh, this is going to be really cool.
Now, Amanda was in another book too, right?
She was in Guilt.
She was in Guilt also. Okay, so yeah. they're both transplants from Guilt.
So, you know, you can have Guilt out at your store and, you know, have, say, if you like this one, go back and read Guilt. Because Guilt is another just a wrencher killer book.
Now,
probably the closest thing to a psychopath like Roke Hurtley that I must admit,
I think I've read Guilt, but it's been a number of years, so I don't remember much about it, I must confess.
Okay. Okay.
I wish I could remember more. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, well, how many of your books have you read since then? You know, like 25,000?
It seems like it.
I've
got to ask you about the One Word titles, though. Is that going to continue into the future?
You know, I don't have much to say about my titles.
You don't?
No.
You don't? You do make them up, though.
No.
You don't even make
No. Well, quite frequently I don't. This book was written under the name Carnage.
Oh, really?
Totally. And I love the name Carnage.
Carnage.
And I wrote it under the outline was called Carnage, and as you read the book, you can see that it fits the book.
Oh, it definitely fits the book.
But when I handed it in, my publisher and agent both said, I mean, my editor and my agent both said, you know what? We think Carnage is going to put off women. We think it's a little too...
Oh, that's
bloody, too bloody.
Did you agree with them?
Well, I believe that it was bloody, but I wanted it to be because the book is pretty bloody.
Right.
And it's really Carnage.
Well, Carnage fits more than Damage, I think. I definitely.
Well, they wanted Damage because it's more psychologically Damage. You know, it has other overtones that are not so off-putting for the dainty among us.
Right. Exactly.
You know. So. You know, we compromised and went with Damage.
Do you think the publishers know better what's going to sell?
That's a question that I don't know if I want to get into.
Oh, oops.
But they certainly have they have decided, in my case, that they knew what was going to sell better on about, I'd say, of my 22 books, on about 16 of them.
Now, do you play music today?
Playing this morning.
What do you play? What instrument?
Guitar.
So what do you play on your guitar?
Mostly songs that I've written myself, although you're going to laugh. My daughter, as a joke, for my birthday, which was last week.
Well, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. My daughter, as a joke, she's so great, gave me a CD of Neil Sedaka's greatest hits.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Not Laughter in the Rain is one of my favorites.
Oh, well.
I love Laughter in the Rain.
Ooh, I hear laughter in the rain.
Love that song.
Yeah.
Definitely love that song.
Well,
and Breaking Up is Hard to Do.
Breaking Up is Hard to Do.
Oh,
I mean, it's the first song on this CD. And my daughter gave me this because when I was in seventh grade, the only thing I wanted for my birthday was Calendar Girl, the 45 of Calendar Girl.
Oh, wow.
So I got seven of them.
Seven?
Seven of them.
A little overkill, wasn't it?
Yeah. But she said, you know, this is just too cool, and it's your birthday, and I know you like Neil Sedaka for your birthday, so I got this. Well, I put on this CD, and I was smiling like a little baby, singing, do-do-do-down, do-be-do-down-down. You know, I mean, I was just knocked out. So I was playing some Neil Sedaka this morning.
You should get together with Jonathan Kellerman. He has something like
I've played with John.
Have you really?
Yeah, yeah.
He has like something like 60 guitars or something.
Oh, his room is a museum. You know, it's worth what, $3-4 million.
I somehow knew you were going to say that because the way he's with music, I figured you must have at some time talked about it with him. Because the authors seem to know one another pretty well.
Well, there's some of us that, you know, seem to have, you know, found some kind of vibration that works with one another.
Well, what besides music and writing books, is there anything else that you have as a passion in your life?
Well, I have cooking is one of my biggest passions.
All right, you write from Gourmet magazine, I think.
I've had a couple of my recipes published in Gourmet, yeah.
Right, which is no longer with us, unfortunately.
No, I know, it's sad.
Very sad.
I've been in a couple of, you know, these kind of anthology cookbooks that they have, and but, you know, my books have a lot of food writing in them. And plus, I'm the cook in my house. You know, I was out with Jeff Parker the other day, T. Jefferson Parker, and we were talking about it. He goes, are you serious about cooking? I said, well, let's see. I make my own olives. I pick them and cure them. I do my own sun-dried tomatoes. I do my own peppers.
Wow.
You know, I do my own anchovies.
Right.
And then I cook, you know, and I cook every day for the family.
Every day? How much time do you spend a day cooking?
Well, it depends on what I'm making, but, you know, currently my wife's in Wisconsin right now, but last night, getting ready for that, I prepared a cassoulet, which I'm going to have for her when she gets home.
Wow.
And then I also had the novelist Max Bird over to my house, who's my good buddy, over for dinner. We had a steak dinner that I cooked. And it was just easy. It was just steak, but it was
suddenly really I wish I lived near you.
Yeah, and wine is a great passion of mine as well. I love wine. You know, I have a couple of wine cellars, and you know, I have about 800 bottles, and they're all good.
I guess it begs the question: what is it in life you don't like?
Well, I like a lot. I try to keep it interesting
seems like you,
and happy.
It seems like there's a lot of things you're
I think the main thing I like is I like hanging out with fun people. I mean, it's my main passion. I would rather just, you know, hang out and talk with people and be eating and drinking and having a good time than doing anything else.
Right. Now, what's the plan for this book as far as a book tour? Are you doing a book?
I'm done, essentially.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did it the last 2 weeks. I was out, you know, I did a lot of California, and then I did Lexington, St.
You never
Louis.
Guess it, you never come to the East Coast to see us. I don't know why.
I keep asking Dutton. If you want, you can ask them to come and send me out there.
And bring Harlan Coben with you, will you?
Hey, listen, I'm going to be at the International Thriller Writers, you know, Thriller Fest this summer.
Oh, really?
In New York. And that's, you know, at the Grand Hyatt. In fact, I'm the, what do they call it? Spotlight guest. I think there's four of us. It's me and Crace and Ken Follett and.
Oh, how cool is that? Oh, you've met Ken.
I met him last year. It was one of the highlights of my life.
Yeah,
we actually had a discussion, and he's just like a normal guy. Wait, you're a god.
Well, you should just. I've been dying to interview him. If you would put in a good word for me, I'd love that.
He's going to be at this thing too. You should just come.
That's true. I think I just might now that you say that.
I mean, come on. It's every major thriller writer in the world is there.
Deaver and, I mean, the list goes on.
Oh, yeah. Deaver and Child and Barry and Rollins and me and, you know, Martini and everybody.
You know all these people. Steve Martini's a wonderful guy. I've talked to him on the phone. He's
I like
really
Steve
good.
A lot. I'm going out tonight or tomorrow night with Barry. He's the book of the month in Sacramento this month.
Wow.
So me and my wife are taking him and Liz out to dinner.
Your life is nothing but fun, isn't it?
I try to put some fun in there.
Well, you sound like a fun guy. You sound like somebody that you... I mean, you sound like one of those people that could come over and play... We could play a game of solitaire or something. Some kind of game and have a great time.
There's no doubt.
That's really great to see. Do you get to read a lot of other books? I mean, do you have time?
I'm a voracious reader.
And it doesn't affect your writing at all?
No. Well, sometimes it helps. It helps if I read Elmore Leonard. You know, I just finished...
What is it about him that people just love?
He's a genius. I mean, his voice is just too good to believe. It's just too good to believe. Did you read Djibouti yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't read it yet.
Oh, my God. I just read it. I started it yesterday. I finished it this morning. I read when I'm working out in the morning.
Right.
So, I get on a bike, a stationary bike, or, you know, a stair climber.
Well,
that's
a smart thing, dude. I've been thinking of doing that myself.
That's how I get all my reading done. Not all, of it, but I mean a great deal of my reading. And then I read a lot of first novel. This is part of the giving back thing I try to do.
Right.
I read a lot of first novels by unknowns, and blurb their work. And I at no time have fewer than 7 books on my desk that I have to, read and give a blurb to.
So you really give back an awful lot, which is just wonderful to hear. I wish everybody were like you.
Well, life is, big. Right. I mean, life can be, I hate to say that, but there's a lot of time to do things. Most people just, I don't think take advantage of the time they have. And I try to.
I don't know what your goals were as far as writing and uh-huh. publishing. And, it seems like you've achieved a lot of them. Is there anything you haven't achieved?
I'd like to have, this is going to sound awful, so I don't even know if I want to say it, but I'd like to continue having success, and I'd like to have a book like Damage, at least, that is basically a home run of a book.
Well, you know the next one I'm going to be looking at very closely, just to see if it's better than Damage. I'm going to be comparing that.
Oh, well, I know. But this one, this is the killer about the book business. It's always the next one. If your book didn't get distributed enough, we'll take care of that on the next one. And then if the next one is a little different, which I try to be on all my books, then they go, this isn't exactly what I had in mind. And so then it's the same. But I think there's kind of been a flattening of the plateau that, I've been in a very good space. I've had, 14 bestsellers in a row. So
right. Well, what's the highest you've gotten? Have you gotten a number? You've gotten a number 4.
I've gotten to 4. But I got to 4 for 1 week on the first law, and it immediately then fell completely off the list.
Right.
And that's because of poor distribution. It's as simple as that.
Well, once the TV show starts, things should really take off.
Right. But, my wife says, what are you talking about? There's nothing you haven't done. And I said, it wouldn't hurt me to have a book really have a little bit of legs. Have a book stick around for 2 or 3 months on the list. I wouldn't have to get to number 1.
Well, I got news for you. This book will stay my pick for a while.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I have anything to say about it. It'll be 3-4 months.
And
I'll still be telling people how good it is.
Good.
When a book is that good, and from what you say, it's going to get even better at the end. I can't wait to read the end now.
Mm-hmm.
Now I wish I could hang up and read the rest of the book. I said that to an author one time, and they almost got offended at me. I don't know why. I didn't mean it that way.
I have found that there is just so much of, defensiveness or uptightness or whatever you want to call it about, in this publishing world. If God forbid you ever say to a publisher, I think you screwed up on that distribution thing. Oh my God, it's almost like you said, their children were, evil. I mean, it's just like the defensiveness of both authors and publishers and people in the biz is something that you have to be aware of because, the thin skin thing is just crazy.
And the thing with Damage,
I don't have that because I was a musician. Hello, playing on stages. I've had beer bottles thrown at me. So I don't have a thin skin.
Right.
I'm good with you don't like that? Well, good. Okay. You'll like the next thing.
Right. But I wonder how long this story Damage was in your head. Has it been in your head for years, do you think?
No. No. I mean, I've been writing a book a year.
Well, sometimes people, authors have a story and they're dying to tell it, and it takes years and years, and finally they'll tell the story and they'll say, I've been thinking about this for years.
Well, sometimes you get a story like Damage where the original idea of the guy, when you first kind of see the story, I was talking to my friend Al Giannini, who's my legal consultant,
right,
about what was going on in the law business, and he said, well, this is a pretty interesting case. This guy got, and he told me the story of the rapist murderer. Well, as soon as I saw that, I said, oh, yeah, this is the story. But that was probably 2 years ago.
Now, Roe was not in any of the earlier books, right?
Never.
Never. I was talking to somebody about that yesterday, and I didn't know whether he'd been in an earlier book. So it happened to Glitzky before, but we just didn't. It wasn't the focus of any of the books.
Exactly. I mean, at that time, he just put somebody in, he arrested somebody, and he went to jail.
And I'm amazed. I'm amazed that through the book, and people will know this when they read it, but I'm amazed that Glitzky keeps his job during the book. There are times I think that he's going to lose it.
Pretty close.
And I must say, the one scene, and I'm just going to call this the grand jury scene.
Yeah.
Is going to stick with people forever. And
I know.
We can't
it's
even
really
say
really good.
We can't even say what it is.
I mean, no, we can't. Don't you think it's pretty amazing?
It is amazing. And you know what? It's still in my head, and I'm thinking about it even now as we're talking. And now people are really curious about what it is.
Yeah, my editor called me when he read that scene.
Yeah.
And he was, like, almost crying. And he's going, I don't know if you can leave this scene in. I said, we're not debating that. This scene stays. Right. He goes, well, I know it's going to stay, but it's just unbelievable. I said, I know, it is.
Well, are you ever worried when you write a scene that people are not going to take it well or that it's going to damage your sales? Damage, listen to
that. I don't think about it.
You never think about that.
So I don't think about it.
You just write whatever it is that you know has to be written in.
And then, well, you know, I have a very, very, very great triumvirate.
Right.
I have a triumvirate of people. Four people. I have my friend Al, my editor Ben Sevier, my agent Barney Karpfinger, and my wife.
Right.
And between the four of them, I get all the criticism I need. You know, and if one of them really just gets up in arms and goes, "This just is awful. I can't do this."
Right.
Well, then I'll go, well, okay, I'll consider that. We'll think about that.
Right.
But generally speaking, you know, there's some critics, you know, who just, you know, wouldn't like it if I wrote the Bible. You know, I'm just using that as an exaggeration. But, I mean, sometimes you just aren't going to please people. Oh, well.
I remember there was a book by, of all people, T. Jefferson Parker about,
yeah.
I think it had serpent in the title. I can't remember the name of the title.
Where the Serpent Lies.
Is just the most intense.
Yeah.
It's one of those books that you never get out of your head once you read it. It's all about child porn and all this horrible, disgusting stuff. And I thought to myself, well, why, you know, how could you write a book like that and not be totally affected by it?
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I think about that book and I shiver because it really affected me very deeply.
Yeah, very, very powerful book. But, you know, Jeff is, to me, when people say, who are your favorite authors, the first name out of my mouth is Jeff Parker.
Wow.
I just think he's, you know, I mean, I think California Girl may be the best, you know, thriller ever.
So how do you make the next book? And I don't know what the title is, and you may, I don't think you even know what the next title is.
Yeah, I do. Well, I'll tell you, the title I'm writing it under is Scavenger Hunt. And it's when, you know, Hunt's going back and trying to find who killed his mother 30 years before.
Oh, so it may be called Scavenger Hunt. I mean, that may be the
title. That's the name I'm writing it under.
Wow. How do you make that better than Damage, is my question.
That's what I'm wrestling with every day, is my answer.
So do you lay awake at night wondering?
No. No, I'm very, very, very organized about getting to work at 10 o'clock after I work out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I start thinking about my writing.
So your writing time is 10 in the morning until whenever you finish?
5 at night.
And that's it, 10 to 5.
That's it.
That doesn't seem like a long day, but when you're wrestling with all these problems, it's got to feel longer.
Well, it's a 7-hour day without a lunch.
You don't have lunch? You don't stop for lunch?
No.
Wow.
No. I mean, some days I go out to lunch, but on a typical day, I don't go to lunch. I just get in here at 10 and go to 5.
Right. And how long, generally, how long for a first draft doing it 10 to 5? I mean,
well,
are we talking?
Well, 20 books in a row, essentially. I've handed in an outline on September 1st and handed in the book on June 1st. And I'd say the first 4 months of that, say September to January, are working with the issues and the jargon that I don't know and doing research and getting ready to go. And then I get into work mode sometime between December 1st and January 20th.
Right.
And get going. Now I have, I think, about 55 pages on Scavenger Hunt, and I'm hoping to have, you know, 100 pages within 2 weeks.
And then you'll have it done by, you said April?
June 1st.
June 1st. You have to June 1st. That's it. That seems like a doable thing.
Yeah. Well, it's doable if you work every day.
Right.
It's not doable if you don't.
Now, you're including the weekends, too.
No.
Oh, not the weekends. Okay.
No. I mean, you know, when I was, you know, struggling,
I don't blame you. I wouldn't work the weekends either.
I don't work the weekends. Forget it. Come on. What's the point of being a success if you got to work weekends?
That's right. That's making work your life.
Yeah. It's you know, and work is a, you know, it's a fun part of my life and it's a big part of my life, but it's not my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my life is my family and my friends and stuff like that.
But you would safely say that if you weren't a writer, you would be a musician. Is that safe to say?
Well, I couldn't make a living at it. I mean, I did make a living at it, but what I called the living then and what I'm calling the living now not exactly the same thing. If somebody, you know, wanted to sing my songs, you know, and turn them into hits, that would be fine.
Right.
You know, because I do have a whole lot of really good songs. But, you know, when I'm the singer of them, it loses something in the translation.
I could talk to you all night. It's just a pleasure to talk to you, John.
Well, you
really
can call
is.
Me anytime. It's great.
I may take you up on that.
Yeah.
But the book, again, we have to finish, unfortunately. There has to be a finish somewhere, I guess. But
yeah.
The new book, again, is called Damage, and believe me, you're never going to forget this one. It's out from Dutton and all your bookstores now, and go and get it because you'll love it. And when you get to the grand jury scene, you're going to say, oh, my gosh. And you're going to say, I hate John Mustafa.
Yeah, I hate that guy.
I mean, really.
Yeah, but, you know, I feel the pain, too. Believe me, I just had to do it in the name of art.
Well, sometimes scenes have to be done. I mean, you think of the baseball bat scene, and what was that movie? I forget which movie
Capone.
It was. Was it The Untouchables?
Yeah. Oh.
Horrible, horrible scene. I mean, but
yeah.
But in order to show how really awful he was, you have to show a scene like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean, and it's amazing how those directors know exactly what has to be done and what needs to be cut out. And you know the same thing with writing books. You're an artist that way. You know what works and what doesn't. You know when a book is boring, and you know when a book is exciting.
Right.
And that's what we want, the exciting ones.
Yes, we do. Cut out those boring parts.
I can't wait to read. Now, what did you say the next one's? Treasure Hunt? No, not Treasure
Scavenger
Hunt. Scavenger Hunt. Treasure Hunt was the one before.
Right.
I'm getting confused, too. Now.
And now, also, you got to go out right now and go right after you're finished Damage. You really have to go read Djibouti.
Really?
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, I have to take your word for that.
I mean, his language is just unbelievable. And the story's great, but within the first page, you're sitting there. I mean, I laughed out loud twice in the first page because of his sentence structure and what he does.
I assume you've met him.
A couple of times. I've never really chatted with him at length, though.
Well, here's one last question. If you could meet any author right now, who would it be? Living or dead?
Any author right now.
Well, let's do the living and the dead to see.
Yeah. Well, living. You know, I really know a lot of them.
Right.
You know, living.
It's kind of hard because you've met them all.
I really know them all. I don't mean all, but you know, I don't know who.
Hmm.
Maybe Stephen King. I've never really met him.
Oh, I feel the same way too. I would love to have lunch with him or dinner or anything.
He'd be an interesting guy to talk to. And I think dead. I'd like to meet Hemingway.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I mean, because I know we would get along. We could go fishing. That's my other
passion. You sound like you get along with everybody. You don't sound like
I get along with a lot of people, yeah.
You do sound like you're no-nonsense and just right up front and easy to get along with. And that's
nice. I come from a family of 7 brothers and sisters, and none of them have any respect for me at all.
Well, I've got 6, so I'm up there with you.
Yeah, so you know, it's perfect. It just tells you, you know, life is, you know, a bunch of people sitting around and,
right, exactly. Well, it sounds like you're having a lot of fun doing it, and that's great to see. This is, we have to say goodbye, but...
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
I enjoyed it, and I'm going to send this book off to your buddy right away.
Oh, wonderful. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.